You are listening to a Bible talk recorded at the 2011 Western Christadelphian Bible School at Manuka. The speaker is Mark DiLiberto, and this is the third class in his series on the subject of healing. This address is entitled Steps 5 to 8 and was recorded on July 27th, 2011.
Okay. Get our coffees. Let's get relaxed. I got to cover 12 steps. I'm on 3. It's Wednesday. And I want to give some time on Friday to address a few specific issues of healing. And we're not going to do that if I don't kick it in gear. So here we go. You notice that the first few steps are individual. They have nothing to do with your brother. It's really primarily first you as an individual, me as an individual. Recognition of our own problems. Recognizing that we have the defects and addressing them. And the final step, and this is the one you're not going to like, and nor did I, but truth unfortunately has a way of being uncomfortable sometimes. And here we go. Step 3, recognition that we are helpless and not in control to win these battles. Oof. I don't want to hear that. The term helpless in and of itself is a term I don't really feel comfortable with. I never want to feel helpless. I'm in a business that renovates homes. If I told a customer I felt helpless to renovate your house, not good. It's not a good thing. I have to be in control. They want to know I'm in control. But when it comes to these things, brethren and sisters, the first thing we've got to recognize in our battle is that we are not in control and we are helpless to win these battles, ecclesially, individually, or as a body. We are not in control. Okay. One verse. Matthew 5:3. Blessed are those who recognize that they are spiritually helpless. It's a little different twist than the King James, but it gets the message. Blessed are they who recognize that they are spiritually helpless. What is baptism? I'm not ready to start a class on what baptism is, but what really, if you dress baptism down, is baptism a statement of?
Death.
Okay.
Rebirth.
Right.
Answer of a good conscience toward God.
Yeah. But I like that one there too. As opposed to what? Let me throw one at you. Is it not plainly saying Mark DiLiberto cannot do it? That's what it's exactly. That's what it's really saying. I was on the baptismal committee for years, and fortunately, one good thing we did, although there were a few things maybe I would adjust today, but a few good things we did is we always wanted the person to recognize that you need to take this step. Without this step, you can't do it. You can't climb that mountain. You can't overcome that sin. You cannot accomplish the things you want to accomplish without Christ. And that, in essence, is what baptism is. So in reality, we believe that we are helpless. And our baptism is a public statement of that situation, of that condition. Where is that water? Somebody's
right to your right.
Okay. Marco, man, he is like, he's sensitive to your needs. Okay. Sometimes. In Acts, when Peter preached at the day of Pentecost, They reacted by being pricked in their hearts that what Peter was saying was true, and they were baptized because they then recognized that without Christ, they couldn't make it. So they were pricked in their hearts with this idea. We can't do it. Can't do it on our own. Today's vernacular, they got it. They got it. They got the message. They connected the dots and they were baptized. They put on a new set of clothes. What does Galatians say about getting baptized? There's a certain phrase that we sometimes gloss over, but man, it is so incredibly important. When you come into Christ, what have you done? Galatians 3. You've put on Christ. What does that mean? What do you normally put on? Good. Clothes. We put on clothes. We woke up this morning. I don't know what you go to sleep in, but generally you put on a set of clothes to cover yourself. We've put on Christ in baptism. Why? Because we recognize that our garments stink. Is that clear enough? Our garments stink. We needed to get a new set of clothes. And Christ provided that through his sacrifice. Okay. New cloak. I gotta run through this. Excuse me, just try to stay with me. Pricked in their hearts, put on a new set of clothes. The breaking of bread. We read it every first day of the week. What does it say when we partake of the emblems? What are we doing? Okay, and what is one of the things we've got to do as we partake of the bread? Remember him and examine ourselves. Look at yourself. Put yourself on the table and start dissecting you a little bit. Try to get rid of those problems first. That's what we've got to do. So it's actually in the very act of remembrance of Christ is to examine our own selves. We read it every week. But what do we do? He's got a mark right here. She's got the blemish here. We tend to examine everyone else but ourselves. There's probably some people here that are right now saying, I hope she's listening. I hope he's listening. Oh, maybe it's more than a few. We do this. We do this. And we've got to get out of that mindset. I need to hear this. And believe me, when I put this together, MD was coming up every day. The problems, the issues, the defects that I've got were becoming more and more apparent. And that's where our focus has got to be. Okay, so look, let's get out of that now. So steps 1, 2, and 3 have to do with us individually. Now step 4, we enter into another phase. Well, what about our brother? Are we involved? Are we responsible with his problems as well as our own? After focusing on our own resolutions, we are given clear and direct advice in approaching our brother's problems. Okay, Matthew 5, 23 and 24. Reader, Matthew 5, 23 and 24. The reason I need you to read it, because I don't have a Bible except on my thing, and I got to keep switching back and forth. It's very difficult. So I'm going to need help with this. Matthew 5, 23 and 24. Anyone who gets that, please read it. So the first thing we want to talk about in dealing with our brother's problem is what? It's very important to get it resolved. If your brother has something at aught with you, this is not something. I would rather you put your, what do you think the gift represents? Put your gift on a side and go straighten it out with your brother. What do you think the gift represents?
Any good work you want to do.
Yeah. Anyone else? What do you think the gift represents? Doing your service, doing the things that you know you should be doing, maybe your readings, maybe going to Bible class, maybe doing the things that we've all been cultured to believe are important. And they are. And they are. I don't want people to think that I'm encouraging not. But when something is wrong with your brother, it takes priority. And you know the inference of the way this is said, and I'll give you my impression, is that you want to do it right away. You don't want to wait too long and let this thing hemorrhage. We have a doctor in the midst. What happens if you let an injury hemorrhage? It gets worse. A guy's got a major slash in his arm. Do you want it to keep bleeding? You know what happens when we lose too much blood? Wendy? What happens when we lose too much blood? Well, I know we don't. I know we don't. But technically, everyone's going to say, well, we had a doctor. She confirmed what I believe. I believe what Jesus was saying is stop it, resolve it quickly before it begins to hemorrhage, before this wound begins to hemorrhage. And don't worry about, this is going to sound a little funny, but I know you're going to get it. And don't worry about the complexion problems you might have. Don't worry about the hair color might be a little too gray. Take care of the injury. Don't get so close and worried about the things that don't matter and deal with what does. And the relationship with your brothers and sisters and sister, is critical. In our survival. If we don't figure this out now, we're dead. There won't be any need for Christadelphians in the next 5-10 years. We'll just self-destruct. Because we're going to kill each other if we don't address these issues. Your brother's having a problem. Oh, and it also doesn't say, and go and tell 5 more people before you deal with them. It's what we do. It's funny because it's true. This is what we do. Okay. Extremely important. Next verse. We can't read it. If you want to write these down, I'm just going to give them you. I'll quote them for you and then we'll go on. But believe me, this is scriptural. 1 Corinthians 12 talks about the body of Christ. And one thing it says is when one brother or sister hurts, I hurt. When Ray Riley hurts, Mark DiLiberto hurts. You know, I never understood that until I had my kids. Never understood that. What do you mean? If so Ray's got a problem, so what? Doesn't affect me. Well, that's the way we're supposed to see it. I'll share a quick story with you about that. When I had my children, before I had my children, I really wasn't that concerned about what's the big deal. So your kid's going through a sickness or a disease or a problem. Then one day I got a phone call that James was sledding with his cousin, James, his other cousin James. They were about 11 years old. He was 13. They were coming down the hill. James lost control, hit a tree, fractured his skull. I didn't know that when I was told. I was told, look, he was in a sledding accident. They took him to the hospital. No big deal. They didn't say no big deal. That's what I was surmising. I said, well, you know, maybe they're just overly concerned. He might have bumped his head and they took him down to make sure. So I went to the hospital anyway, just to be sure. And when I went to the hospital, you know those gurneys they put on you, those They strap you down, and you can't move, strapped around the head. He fractured his skull. Oh, boy, what's going on here? The doctor told me, make sure you keep him awake. Don't let him go to sleep. We want to know what's going on. James, get up. You okay? He heard my voice, opened his eyes. Okay, so here we go. But well, just real quickly, what had happened was his brain had shifted. This is what we were explained by the neurosurgeon. His brain literally shifted. And when he looked at me, his eye, one eye was focused on me. The other eye was just floating. Tell me, whoofa. So thank God he straightened out in 48 hours. He came back and he was okay. Here's my point about that. I never underestimate when someone tells me their kids are hurting. They're having a problem. And I understand it a little better because I went through that experience. That's how I have to feel about Ray Riley or Marco Dondero or any of you, sisters, brothers. And I'm going to try to bring this point more and more as we finish this up, that the injury that we have in our bodies regarding our brethren is not an injury with them, it's an injury with me. That's really the scriptural admonition. All right, I think hopefully this will be made clear as we go on. I am a rock. Keep saying I'm Marky. Marky, I'm a rock. Okay. All right, so my brother has a problem. What do I do? How do I resolve it? John, in his wisdom, brought out a great verse in Galatians 6. Let's turn to that. Galatians 6. We're actually given the method on which to deal with a brother that has a problem. Galatians 6. I call it the restoration chapter. The restoration chapter. You know what? Let me pull this up. Galatians 6, the first few verses. How do you deal with a brother that's having a problem? Brethren, if a man or woman, that's my version, if a man or woman be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also should be tempted. Ye who are spiritual, restore, so far so good. This is great. We're gonna help this brother back. Such a one, little phrase, in the spirit of meekness. I'm not too comfortable with that now. Because I remember approaching some brethren who were in a fault with a little bit different spirit. Back home, we call it the baseball bat. It's called the baseball bat approach. And I know all of you think, you know, because I'm Italian, I'm into the... No, I'm not really not. But I'll tell you what. In our group, there are some who feel that the best way to deal with a problem is with a bat. Come to him, knock some sense into the person, and they'll recover. What does that do? Think logically. The guy is wounded, or the sister is wounded. You're coming up to them with a bat, and you're going to beat a couple more wounds into them. Even in the East, that doesn't make sense. Am I right? You can't inflict damage where there's already been damage. A doctor doesn't approach a guy who's been cut. And you know, they used to do that in the 1800s. Somebody had a fever or something. Now, maybe this is totally fictitious. I don't know. But I heard they would actually The physician would cut you open, let you bleed to get the fever out of there and cure you. Then some smarter people came along and said, you know what? I don't think so. That's not really the right way. Why? Why do you want to keep the blood in the body? Well, how about the nurses and even nurses? Life is in the blood. You can't cut someone apart when they're already bleeding. Okay. So in the spirit of meekness, you approach the person. The spirit of meekness. What's the opposite of meekness? What would be the opposite approach?
If you,
baseball bat. Prideful. Hard-hearted.
Judgmental.
Condemning. Sound familiar?
Condescending.
Have we dealt with people in this mode?
Yes.
Let me tell you something. We have. Mark D has. And you know what? I've got to think about that, and I've got to change myself. Because I didn't accomplish anything by knocking someone's head off. I felt good about it. It always feels good to give, you know, I shouldn't say that, but it does, doesn't it, guys? Guys understand that. In a fight, one good solid shot, you knock them out, you feel terrific. Unfortunately, you haven't solved anything. That's the problem. In the spirit of meekness. Oh, there's one more point being made here. Look at this. Considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. In other words, part of the formula is you better consider, let's say the brother's having a temptation problem or a depression. You could be going through that yourself. You're not absolved from these issues. You're not above what this brother's going through. It could be you. And how would you like someone to be approaching you if you had the problem? Okay. Enough of that. Let's go back to the verses. So, remember your own weaknesses, approach them in the spirit of meekness. Matthew 18:14-15. Matthew 18:14-15. So much is written on this, you wouldn't believe. 18:14. Right in the back of, even so, it's the will of your Father which is in heaven that that one of these little ones should perish. It is not the will of your Father. He says this, if your brother trespass against you, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. And if he hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. Interpretation. Go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. Point. What do we do? What do we do? Someone's done something against you or said something against you and you're upset or whatever. And what's generally the approach we make? Hold on. Stop. Pete Carlson, guess what? Paul, unfortunately, you're sitting here, so you're the guy. Paul Sharp, do you know what he did yesterday? Yeah. We have to go. My responsibility is to go to him alone. That alone should be in italics, highlighted, and made about that big. Because we haven't got that either. We have, our approach that we have gotten to, brethren, is we spread the news before we do anything. My obligation is to go to my brother alone and do it right away. Now, another thing. After I go to my brother and try to work it out, what's the next step? Do I instantly start, well, certainly not telling other people. Do I instantly go to step two? Because we want to see this in steps and procedures, right? This is how we think. If thy brother turns back, go and tell him the fault between him and thee alone. If he hear thee, you've gained your brother. But if he doesn't hear thee, then take two or three more. There you go. We can go to other people. Right? Let's back up a little bit. Does anyone here think that step one, going to your brother alone, is a one-shot deal? This is a phase, brethren. What Christ is saying here is, There's phases in restitution. Phase one is deal with it on a one-on-one basis. It doesn't mean go to him and the first day start taking two or three. The next day you take the ecclesia and the fourth day by Friday you bundle them out. That is not the procedure. The procedure is deal with him and him alone for a period of time. What's the wisdom of that? What's the real wisdom of that? Right? Right? Two? I can't hear you. Time to think. How about getting it right on my part? Maybe I didn't see the whole picture. Maybe something happened in Paul's life. I didn't have the whole thing. So when I sat down with him and he explained, oh, now I understand. There's really no problem at all. You see, there's great wisdom in be patient. Listen to what your brother's going through or your sister's going through. And you know what? I'll tell you my personal opinion. That 90% of our issues could be resolved in step one. There's no doubt in my mind. But what happens is we take the other route, and what do?
It gets blown out.
We're pouring gas on the flame. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mark, I don't know the verse, but it says something to the effect that if you're able to save your brother from his fault, you've covered a multitude
yeah.
of sins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm never sure whether that's them or you or whether it's both.
Good question.
That is a good question. That is a good question. Could I throw my two sins? I would have said 5-10 years ago, it's his sins. Now, it's mine. You have remedied something with him, but there's no doubt it's you. And you know what? By doing, having these approaches toward your brother, you're healing not him. Maybe you are. Maybe Paul and I will be resolved at the end of the dispute, but I'm solving my healing. That's the real message. That's who's really getting healed in this. Yeah, Rand?
I think it should be both. From what you're telling us, if we're our brother's keeper and that resolution has been made, then it's both. I mean, that verse that she mentioned as far as covering a multitude of sins, and, you know, both parties are involved. Both parties are healed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it is both. I just would have ignored me in it before. Now I'm part of it. Because in this study that I've come to one conclusion, the healing that I always looked at in terms of healing the other guy isn't really where the emphasis for me is. It's actually healing Mark DeLiberto. And that's one thing it's going to become more and more apparent, I hope. There's one more factor in here I got to underscore and underline that we've got to get across. Anybody know the term anonymity? Big word. I don't never use it. But anybody know what it is? Anybody know what it means?
All the golds do.
You're not
All the gulls do. All the gulls do. Anonymity. Confidentially. Brethren, we have blown it. We have blown this one off the map. Probably more damage has been created in our ecclesias from a lack of anonymity than just about any other single thing. It's destroyed lives. It's destroyed lives. There was one other point I wanted to make about that, anonymity. Why the importance of anonymity? Oh, do you ever wonder why our young people, tell me if I'm wrong or right on this, and maybe for all of us, why do so few people go to the ecclesia for help? Take it easy. I'm trying to prick the mind here. But you can answer. I don't mind. Do you feel comfortable? Let me go to, I'm going through a problem. I'm going to go to our ABs, or I'm going to go to Brother So-and-so, and I'm going to tell him everything that's going on in my life. Why don't we do that very often? We do that in some circumstances. It's not very common practice. Why? Man. The what?
Judgment or apathy.
I'm afraid. Yeah, John. Exactly. Yeah. In plain English, everyone in 2 days will have a diametrically laid out plan of everything MD has gone through.
Well, at the end of the week, you'll be disfellowshipped.
That too. But let's start with point one. Yeah, I have no confidence that what I'm going to, when I go to that brother or those brethren or sisters, they're going to keep their mouths shut about my problem. That's why I've really come to the conclusion that in some instances, when people come to me and say, should I go to a counselor or a psychologist? You know what I say? You know, maybe you better. Because if the ecclesia cannot keep your thing private, you know what? I'm not telling you. I don't want my linen all over the place. My dirty linen. So this is a great, great, I'm trying to underscore this point. Anonymity. If it's a word you never heard of, it just means keep your mouth shut. And I have no idea. Anonymity. Okay. Next. Okay. Take the time and effort. Okay. James 1:19. Great verse. This is actually step five. We're entering into step five, by the way. I'm going to give you step five. Concerning and supportive spirit. It's got to be developed. Concerning and a supportive spirit. And this is what comes with those two things. Watch this. It's going to get a little hairy here. James 1:19. Probably you could quote it. Anybody know the verse? Great verse. First person who finds it, tell me what it says.
If you know my beloved brethren, let everyone quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger.
Slow to speak, MD. Oh, not me. Slow to speak, what was the second one? Well, let's get the two that you got to be slow at. Slow to speak and slow to anger. If you're going to get involved in healing, helping people heal, stop yakking, okay? And don't get angry easy. If you explode, it's over. Keep calm, keep your mouth shut, and do what? Listen. While it might sound a little funny, and that's really why maybe we have the 2 ears, it's a key ingredient to resolution. Because when you listen, you understand. And you start to figure out what is necessary maybe to be said. I'm not saying you never say anything, you never respond, you never advise. But one thing is true, you'll get a better picture if you keep your mouth shut, don't get angry because that clouds the mind, and listen to what your brother's dealing with. And then you'll be better equipped to help heal the problem. Yeah.
Ooh.
Okay. Okay. That's good. Point number two. Here's a good one. Don't think you can understand all their problems. This is huge. This is huge. MD, when I was 21, I got it all. You could come up to me with anything. Dope, depression, lost your kid. Your father died, I understand. I understood nothing when I was... I'm sorry, guys. We do understand some things, but I got to tell you, you're not going to understand a lot of things until you go through it. The worst thing I used to do is tell people... Let me give an example. Lost your father. My father died this year. I understand. Now, my father died when he was 78 years old, about 10 years ago, 8 years ago. Let me tell you something about Mark DeLiberto, what he thought about dealing with his father's death. You know what? If I know he's going to die, I'll deal with it. Because Dad developed Parkinson's, very severe Parkinson's, and ultimately had a stroke, and I knew he was dying. So MD, Mark D, said, okay, Dad's going to die probably in the next 2 weeks. Now, fortunately, I had a time to sit down with him. I don't know whether he heard a thing I said because he was just not coherent at all. And I talked to him. Okay, a week later, Dad died. You know what? I didn't get it at all. I thought I intellectually could say, well, if I know he's dying, I know he's dead, I'll deal with it, and it's prepared. My mom died of a heart attack. That was something that was more spontaneous. But Dad, I just knew where he was going. And I used to think that as long as I know it, I could deal with it. Those of you who've lost your parents... You got to go through it, don't you? And no matter how much you expect it, no matter how senile they were, no matter how Alzheimer's has taken over their mind, when they go, something has to be dealt with. So now, if you tell me, you know, I had a father who passed, maybe I could better understand it now because I've been there. I'll tell you another thing. I used to think I understood childbirth. Oh, yeah. I know. Look, I've seen pictures. I read the book. I know what it's all about. Men, I'm gonna share something with you. We don't have a clue what's going on. We kind of know what's academically the canals and the thing and turning, all that stuff. A woman, those who had children, can tell me what it's like to have a child. I don't know. I would never go to a woman and tell me about childbirth and say, I understand what you went through. Yeah.
Mark, I would like to counter that with just one comment, particularly with regard to young people, that you don't have to live every possible disastrous thing to understand why God told us not to do it in the first place. These things were given to us as examples because of God's mercy to us. He was trying to save us from suffering through all these situations, and we're given a lot of warnings. And if we don't heed them, then we understand why God tried to warn us about them in the first place.
Okay, so don't...
You don't have to cut off your finger to know the knife was sharp.
Good, good. Good point. That's... Seven. Great point. Well, Sylvia, great point, and we're gonna deal with that. What I think the point I'm trying to get at now is, we don't need, when someone is hurting and needs healing, you don't need to tell them you get it all. I understand everything you're going through, because you probably don't. The big thing is that the concern is there. That's healing. The fact that you noticed your sister or brother was hurting is healing in and of itself. You don't need to tell them you understand it. Just be concerned and just be supportive. That's the course to true healing. Five. Wow. Six. Let's talk about some of the tools scriptures tells us we need in healing. What is the theme verse of our Bible school? How many know? Look at your thing. What's the theme verse? It wasn't based on my class, but it happened to be in the theme verse. Psalm 25, 4 through 7. Psalm 25, 4 through 7. I'll read it. Show me thy ways, O Lord, teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day. Here we go. Remember, O Lord, thy tender mercies and thy loving kindness, for they have been ever of old. And here it is. Remember not the sins of my youth, nor my transgressions. According to thy mercy, remember thou me for thy goodness' sake, O Lord. What's the underlining principle in that verse that's so important to healing? Forgiveness. Brethren, we have a God that forgives. And you know what? It's interesting how he said it said here. Remember not the sins of my youth. Do we do that with our brother or sisters? Yeah, we'll forgive them. But man, let me tell you, that mark is there. When I need an ace, it's going down. Yeah, remember when you... Forgiveness is blotting away, blotting out, remembering no more. We do not forgive that way, brethren. We don't. Now, I don't know how to resolve this completely in my head, but I'll tell you this. It's a glaring dilemma in our beliefs. How do you forgive and forget? We really can't do that. It's very difficult to do. If Jen did something against me 10 years ago, I can't get that out of my head. The human mind somehow retains it and never lets it go. But yet that's how God forgives.
Maybe above that, memory loss would help.
That's coming. Maybe that's the Lord is blessing me in not being able to remember many of the things we do.
One of the hardest things is forgiving yourself, actually, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Forgiving yourself and forgiving your brother. Truly forgiving. Putting it aside. Don't keep hanging up. Well, I did this when I was a kid and the Lord never forgave me and never... That is not the forgiveness we believe in. And yet it's the forgiveness we transact with our brethren. I'll give you a perfect example. An ecclesia is dealing with a brother in trouble. I don't know, drugs, sex, stealing, whatever. And it's brought to the table. Look, I'm not saying the ecclesia ignore it. You deal with it. The brother says, I've done it. I know I screwed up. I want to be forgiven. I've approached God in forgiveness. And what do we do? Let's see. Maybe... Let's think about this for a while. Maybe it goes on for a few months. Then maybe we start to say, okay, maybe you could come back in a very limited way. And then maybe we'll... And what do? We string it along. We never allow the person to really feel that they've been forgiven. Because you keep reminding them. Listen, you got to sit in the back. You can't say anything in the class. You can't teach, speak, and do that. And I'm not saying any of this is completely wrong. I think there is a way to bring someone back into the fold, and it does take time, but not the way we do it, brethren. We almost like reinforce the guy to never forget what you did.
So how should it be done?
I don't know. You got to tell me. Don't let me do all the work. How should it be done? Somehow, we've got to truly forgive and forget.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to do that. Maybe a development of the spirit mind and what we're learning here this week is a help. You know, back to my point that I said in the beginning, this is not going to be like a capsulized test on how we resolve all healing. I don't have all the answers. I have a lot of the problems. I see a lot of the problems. I'm just trying to figure that out myself. But I know what we're doing, some of the things we're doing are wrong, and I'm just trying to point it out, and you guys got to think about how to resolve it, and so do I. We got to change something. Remember the 50% that are getting lost out of the ecclesia? Something's wrong. Okay. Okay. Compassion. Okay. Tools of healing. So forgiveness, true forgiveness, one tool. What example do we have of that in the scripture that makes that so plainly clear? In fact, it was mentioned today in this morning's class. Adrian mentioned it. There were two sons. One out there gallivanting, he's living it up. And the other one, he's doing his readings every day. He's going to classes. He's attending ecclesia. And then the other one, the sinful, no good son, he's out there in the world. He starts coming back. First thing that happens, father sees him afar off. What does that tell you? Again, why do you think that analogy is used? Every father here would understand what that father was going through. My son is dead. I'll die to see him. I'll do anything I can to get him back. So he looked every, I think he was looking every day. When's he coming back? Then he sees him. What does he do? Hold on, son. We're gonna have to have a meeting with you first. We're gonna sit down, 2-3 to ABs. We'll talk to you. We'll try to get you straight. What does he do? Runs to him. Who does the father represent? Well, ultimately, it's God, and I think it should be us. The first thing he does, he runs out, grabs him, kisses him. Son, I'm so thankful you're back. When have we done that? I never did. We've had people come back, and Mark DiLiberto never did. Hey, let's keep an eye on that guy. Let's watch him for a while. Make sure he's really straightened out. What's the attitude of the brother? The other, I was going to say something, but you wouldn't understand that my mother had a good term for it. The other brother, what's the attitude? Hey, Dad! Oh, wait. I've been keeping myself straight. I've been watching myself. I've been doing my reading. I'm doing everything I got to do. And you're going to kill the fatted calf for this guy, my brother. Oh, brethren, is this a message for us or what? I mean, this is as clear. See this nose? I'm proud of this nose. It's as clear as the nose on that face. It's shouting to us. Guys, wake up. We've got to wake up. Okay, let's stop there and we'll try to finish tomorrow.